welcome to the Marketing Development Podcast. My name's Pete Everett, and it's a delight to have you with us. Today, I'm talking to Robbie Handley, who's an agency owner. Interestingly, his agency had literally just turned one at the time of recording. So we had a great chat about his first year of business and also about social PPC, which is his area of expertise. There's loads of value in this episode, and it was a great chat. I really hope you enjoy it. Welcome to episode 7 of the Marketing Development Podcast. And today I'm talking to a friend of mine and somebody that I've worked with in the past, Robbie Handley. How are you doing, mate?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good. All good. It's a grey, miserable day here in Sheffield, which is what you get at the start of April, unfortunately. But
the ever-going monsoon that doesn't seem to have any signs of stopping.
Oh, tell me about it. Tell me about it. The thing I hate most, actually, is that it's the drizzle. It's the drizzle that never ends.
Yeah.
If you live in a place where even if it rains, but it sort of clouds over, then pelts it down for an hour or two, and then the sun comes out again, I can live with that.
it's the kind of constant reminder that the weather is terrible is the drizzle, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It just dull grey. Oh, anyway. Nasty. Anyway. On to brighter things. So Robbie is, as I say, we've done some work together in the past, haven't we?
Yep.
And he runs a company called RJH Digital, which, well, I'll tell you what, rather than me murder it, why don't you introduce who you are and what you do?
I started RJH Digital January 2017. We're essentially a small digital marketing agency. We run... You know, we'll do anything really. We tend to focus on performance media and growth for smaller companies. So we do a bit of everything from social PPC, pay per click. We do some SEO. We contract that out to Pete. We do social media management. You know, a bit of everything really. Anything digital. A lot of marketing automation. Working with sort of SaaS startups. We tend to do a lot of that, you know, working on kind of HubSpot and some other big Marketo and you know, the other big marketing automation platforms. Really we're in the market for, you know, the startup companies and the smaller guys, kind of bridging the gap between we kind of sit at the cheaper end of agencies really. We've been going a year now, just over a year. I can't complain. It's going better than I could have thought, really. So that's a little bit about us.
Congratulations for the anniversary. That's
I did a little LinkedIn post. I think I got about 10 sympathy likes. People just going, oh yeah, well done, mug.
So just to pick up on that then. So you started January 2017, which is actually that's only 2 months after I took the plunge and started the digital agency that I run. So what was it that pushed you over the edge?
Well, I'll tell you what it was actually. I worked for a company called Oddschecker, who anyone in the gambling industry would know well. They're owned by Skybet, and I was working as their social PPC manager, and I live nearest makes no difference, an hour and a half outside of London train. So it was taking me about 3 hours a day, door to door. And one day I essentially, to cut a long story short, ended up sitting at Richmond Station for about 2 hours waiting for a train. Cool. And this had been about the sort of fifth time it happened in the month. And I've been doing consultancy work on the side, sort of moonlighting and stuff for years now. So I had a small client base, which were giving me a nice little top up on my income. And I just thought, I just thought to myself, this is the completely wrong way to live your life as someone with my skill set. You know, I was quite a rounded digital marketer despite being specialized in social PPC. You know, I was helping other clients with, you know, different bits and bobs. So I just thought to myself, you know, why am I spending 3 hours of my day minimum going to and from work, not earning as much as I could be earning? And I thought, now is the time, you know, now is the time to give this a go. So that was it, really. I literally decided on the train. I came up with the name RJH Digital. I wrote a Evernote business plan for the year, and and sort of thought about how I was going to make the transition. So the first 6 months, I was actually still contracting at Oddschecker, which, you know, they really helped me there, and they really, you know, enabled me to bridge. You know, I wasn't just cut, you know, straight away. I had a nice little 6 month overlap where I was able to sort of have some breathing space and you know, win some new business just purely through RJH Digital. So yeah, it was quite a quick decision, really. But I think any marketing consultant out there, freelance marketing consultant, would know, would have got the same. I'm sure you're the same. You would have got that kind of that gut feeling of, I think now's the time. I think it's the right time in my life to give this a go. That's how it started, really.
That's cool. You know, it's interesting that you say it took 6 months. I've started two companies, or this is the second company I've started, and both of them I started from a position of being unemployed, and both of them took 6 months to really get comfortable, to know that you had, you know, more than a month's worth of salary in the bank, so that you could have that confidence that if the world ended today, I'm still all right. You know, I've got some time to sort it out.
To get a job if you have to, or, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's no shame. I think one thing I've learned is that there's no shame in being a bit scared and a bit worried at the start. You know, there's no shame in that. You know, I mean, I'm a year in, and I think the business is, if I compare it to a child, you know, it's just starting to learn its first word. It's just starting to walk on its own. And I think there's no harm in knowing that your business is very, very small time, and it lives month to month, and it, you know, and it's, you are very much a case of, I mean, in the early stages, yes, I had the contract, but, you know, I was very much, you know, invoices being paid on time was massive for me in the first year, you know, absolutely massive, you know, for my personal bills and where I wanted to grow the business. And I think at the time I was a little bit ashamed of that. And I think now I've sort of come out the other side and I've got a few bigger retainers, I think to myself, well, why was I ever ashamed of that? You know, every business, unless you've managed to get yourself some investment, which, you know, my business was purely off my own back. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no shame in that at all. Absolutely not.
When I started my first company, so my first company it was called Coda Digital Media, and it built itself as a web development house, where actually it was me as a freelancer, just with a bit of bravado, making myself look bigger than I really was.
Yeah.
And I started it on October the 1st, and I needed 50 quid. I needed to pay 50 quid into the business account to open the business account. So my mum gave me 50 quid as a kind of as a gesture to get me going.
Good luck, son.
Which was great. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it. There's our investment in your future. You've cost us enough. Is one final 50 quid. Off you go. And I was in my early 20s. I don't know. I was about 24 or something. And I had this 50 quid in this business account. And then I got a bill from Companies House, which, if you're listening outside the UK, Companies House is the government body for registering companies, and it cost me £40 to register the company. Yeah. Right, I could afford that. So on the 1st of October, I had 50 quid in the account. By something like the 3rd of October, I had 10 quid in the account.
Welcome to business.
Yeah, absolutely. And my wife's going off to work every day, and I'm thinking, if I don't get some money in this account by the end of the month, she's really going to think this is a bad idea. And I had to do exactly that. You know, I had a list of jobs to do. Some of them were for, I've got this kind of thing. I'm a bit reluctant doing work for friends, you know, personal friends.
I get that.
As a boundary. But yeah, there were some clients that I was working with that I was closer to than others through previous jobs and contact and all that kind of stuff. So I approached them and I said, look, I could, you know, I'll work every hour God sends to get this done, but I want the bill paying by the 28th of October or whatever it was. Uh-huh. And they agreed to it. And you know what? It happened. And I paid myself in full on the, you know, what I was expecting to pay myself on the 28th of October. And then November became a bit easier, and December became a bit easier, and January was a bit easier. And then by the time you got through to March, hey presto, I've got like 2 months worth of salary in the account. I've been paying myself. Mm. And we entered that following summer having the lifestyle that we'd sort of dreamt
that
of.
That you wanted,
you know,
yeah.
You know, so.
But I think one thing both of us have kind of touched on is anyone that is looking to go, you know, any consultants out there that are looking to go, you know, into sort of full-time self-employment, or, you know, the marketing guys out there looking to do that, is, you know, we both, you mentioned there that, you know, you had clients you were closer to from previous work. And a lot of my early work came from people who I'd been helping whilst I was employed. So I think relationships are absolutely massive. You know, I mean, it really is, you know, you hear a lot of noise about networking, and how you network. Networking to me doesn't necessarily mean you're attending a networking meeting every Friday, which they always seem to do ridiculously early, by the way, like 6 a.m. Like, I'm just not going to go wake up at 6 a.m. to go to a hotel in Slough to eat bad croissants. That's just not who I am.
Hey, but, you know, north, mate, we get full English.
Oh, they're terrible down there, I tell you. It's crap coffee, bad croissants. It's just like to go in a room full of strangers. But, you know, that's not networking. For me, networking is, you know, actually building relationships with people, offering value to people, you know, going the extra mile for people that perhaps, you know, that could potentially come back around to help me. You know, I mean, I've been doing some work for a family friend of mine for a long time now. You know, I helped actually launch her first website back in 2011, I think it was. Mm. And, you know, I had that relationship and I have that trust and I've built that trust. And, you know, when I said to her, look, I'm going to go self-employed, I've got this skill set. She said, well, why don't, you know, I can offer you out to my clients, put a bit of a markup on you, and, you know, we can build something there. And that makes up 25%, 30% of my business, you know, and that was just a simple conversation. And for me, that, you know, when people do ask, a very rare occasion someone asks about my company, I say it's built on networking. It is purely, I don't market myself. I've got, you know, my RJH Digital website, and we're looking to sort of ramp up that side now. We're getting a bit more of a, I put in inverted commas, proper business. You know, we're getting to that stage now. But, you know, my clients so far are purely built on trust. It's purely built on networking. Trusting, you know, going the extra mile for people, showing that, you know, there's a lot of my clients who I've actually recommended that they spend less with me. You know, there's one client in particular I can think of. I've said to them, you know, yes, you can come and spend, you know, 1500 quid, you know, 2k on a retainer a month, but actually you're probably better off just hiring us out on a day rate. And we'll just do specific tasks for you because the business just isn't there. Now, I know that if that business idea is a success, they are automatically going to come back to me and say, you know, well, you've advised us this on the past, now what? And then I'll say, well, yeah, now the return, you know. So it's that kind of thing which, you know, you can't, no matter how much marketing you do and how many sort of cold leads you get and pay-per-click funnels and content, that nothing can really, I think, as a business owner, replace that those solid relationships. Absolutely nothing.
No, I fully agree. And I think the other thing to bear in mind with that is that, and this is how we met and how we got, you know, we started working together,
is that
you don't overpromise what you can do, become that trusted advisor, and then you build up sort of two networks, don't you? There's the larger network, which is potentially the new clients or the people that can refer you on, the people that you want to do a good job for. And then there's like an internal network, which are really, I suppose, in cold business terms, you call them suppliers, but you know, how you can, it's about working to your strengths and
absolutely your business has to be your personality as far as I'm concerned.
It really does. You know, it's weird that you've said that, because the episode before you that I literally recorded yesterday is with Kim Doyle, who's a sort of content evangelist from California. And her episode is actually called The Only Differentiating Factor You Have Is You.
Yeah, there you are.
That's exactly what you're saying. The other thing just that I always think about kind of the internal network you get of suppliers is it can be a bit of a lonely journey doing this. And that's, I think that's one of the things that makes people scared. I was never afraid of sitting in a room on my own and grafting at all. But I know some people that scares the living daylights out of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually having these connections, these are the guys that... You know, okay, you know, we're not in touch on a daily or weekly basis or anything, but when we do get in touch, there's that element of like water cooler chat as well. You kind of feel like you're working together, even though you're doing your stuff, I'm doing mine.
Yeah. Because we're in similar positions, aren't we? You know, it's absolutely. And I think, you do have, you know, for me, I'm not someone who can, I can sit in a room and graph, but I've got to have someone around. I've got to have an, And that's why for me, I've just taken out office space in a shared office, and it's made such a difference, you know, because I, you know, this up till now, really, I've been, most of my clients, I've been trying to angle a day on site with them, which obviously adds massive value to them. But for me, to be in an office environment and to have that and to have people around me is such a big thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not wired like you. I couldn't just sit in a room all day. Work all day, you know, I'd be in a terrible mental state if that was me. So you know, I like to mix it up. I like to be out and about. I like to be, you know, in different places and traveling around and keeping it fresh. And so yeah, you know, I kind of used that to my advantage and used it as a value add to customers, you know, especially one of my bigger clients. I said to them, I'll be here, I can be here a day a week, I can be here 2 days a week, and it's going to cost you the same. Now, a lot of cold hard business people would think that's crazy, but for me it was actually, you know, I was getting value out of it, because when you're in an office environment, for me anyway, I pick up other people's energy, I learn things, you know, SEO is not my strong point, so you know, when we did that day together, you know, just hearing someone who's from that world and has that knowledge and that mindset, you know, I can learn so much from that, and I think being in an office environment for me gives me that. But yeah, no. Back to the sort of main point, you know, that's my business taking on my personality. You know, I'm happy to give more add value, and you know, and again, it's networking. I think as well, the internal network you build up, like you mentioned, is massive. You know, I mean, for me, all the contractors I use are pretty much all from a previous agency I worked at, which has since disbanded, and you know, everyone's gone their separate ways. But, you know, these are all people I work with, and I was the head of the team there, so I managed most of these guys. So, you know, I know them pretty, you know, inside out. I managed them for 2 years, so, you know, I know, and I got to know them on a very personal level. So these guys are pretty much, you know, my friends, and, you know, a lot of them have come from a lot of the work. To be honest, none of my higher-end clients, but... You know, a lot of day rate stuff and a lot of hourly stuff that we've picked up has all come from these guys. You know, it's come from them saying, you know, I can think of three websites that I've been referred to by one particular contractor. He seems to come across people who want websites all the time, and you know, he will automatically refer them to us. And it's that kind of mindset, and that's why I always put an emphasis on networking, because you want to be the person when somebody thinks of digital marketing or websites or what, to be honest, whatever it is you specialize in, you want to be that instant. Yeah, I'm gonna refer him.
Yeah,
he's my guy. That's where you win work. Forget, you know, responding to people on LinkedIn and, you know, all the other stuff you can do. It's actually being in someone's thought process is gold. It's absolute gold.
I really like your LinkedIn responses, actually, because Robbie's the kind of guy that he'll go and find these posts that where somebody said, can anybody recommend me a PPC or social PPC expert? And then there'll be like 722 comments, and you'll then comment and say, if any of the 722 people above can't fulfill this role, give me a shout.
Well, you know, you got to try. I just don't... you know, past 20, I don't know why anyone would ever. I mean, fair play, I guess, if you're a BDM for an agency, you've got to be seen to giving it a go. But I just find it funny. I just find that whole LinkedIn funny at the moment, but I appreciate it's probably a bit of a different conversation, but yeah.
You see, I take a slightly different tack on it, because what happens, so we're based in Sheffield, and I'm connected, due to previous agency connections and stuff like that, I'm connected with a number of people that have all gone and set up sort of small time agencies doing websites and SEO and that kind of thing. It's, it's just the sort of network that, that you're in the city that you live in.
Absolutely.
So I'll go and find, I was finding that, you know, well, not even me, one of us would go and find a post and then we'd comment on it. Just like, you know, hi, yeah, we can help you out with that. Give us a shout or connection request sent or whatever it might be. But then because you've done that as a comment on the post, it then shares it to your network. So you'd find that there was always the same 6, 7, 8 people touting for business on the same thing. And I'm like, why the hell should I help you out with this? If you're not going to find this flipping thing, I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to give it to you. So I've stopped commenting on the posts now.
And just approach people directly, sort of thing.
And I just do a personalized invite. So you're, hey, John Smith, I've just seen your post on. This is what I do. It'd be great if we can chat. And actually, that then doesn't publicize the post.
Actually, I do have an apology to make. There's actually a guy called Sal who I who briefly we did some work for, and he again is exactly like you were saying. He you know, he's a part of the sort of same network that I am, and he I think he primarily is employed to do sales for this agency, and I am that guy who comments every time. He seems to find these posts. If I refresh my LinkedIn feed now, and we could do a screen share through a podcast, which I appreciate is impossible. You would probably see 10 posts where Sal has gone, hi, da 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 da. We can help you with this. He has the same response for everyone. So, and I always just chip in underneath and go, hi, we can help you with this. And so, Sal, if you do ever come across, listen to this, I'm really sorry. I'm genuinely sorry. You just seem to just give me. I've never won any work off his post, to be fair, but I've made a point of kind of de-LinkedInifying myself, because I think it's got a bit of a strange beast recently. LinkedIn, it's changed, but it's probably a bit of a different conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So just that's been great, and I didn't expect to you know, sort of take 20 minutes talking about your business, but it's really good to hear your story, and you know, there's certainly elements in that resonate with mine. I know when you said you did your Evernote business plan, I did my business plan on a flight home from Lanzarote.
Keeping it classy.
On my phone, yeah, absolutely. And an easy jet flight from Lanzarote to Leeds Bradford Airport.
Oh, wow.
The flight was delayed by about 4 hours. So my son, who was about 2 at the time, we got on this plane, took off, and he instantly fell asleep. Thankfully, we had like a row of 3 seats for the two of us. He was kind of, we put all the arms up. He was kind of resting on one side of me. He was actually on my right hand side, and I'm right handed. So I had my phone in my left hand, and I did this thing on Evernote, wrong handed. But by the time I landed in Leeds, I had a business plan.
There you go. It's amazing, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah, absolutely.
It must have been some heroic autocorrects in there.
Yeah, there must have been. I should dig it out. I must have it somewhere. It'll be in Evernote somewhere.
There's a little LinkedIn post. I bet there'll be some funny stuff in there.
So, so cool. So one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about, mate, is I know you've talked about your you have an agency essentially, and you build websites for people, and if you look at your website, you actually list a number of services of what you do. But I know that paid social really is your bag.
Yeah.
So first of all, I mean, do you want to just give a sort of quick overview as to what you do with paid social and how it can help?
Yeah. So my starting point in paid social was, as many paid social guys are, they're either social media managers who have sort of been chucked it and asked to learn it, or they are PPC guys who have, you know, a lot of companies would put that under the same bracket, and they've learned, you know, the platform and all that sort of thing. I'm the first one. So when I left uni, I had a go at social media and then sort of fell into paid social. So yeah, I mean, you know, we run. I mean, I've run a variety of things, really, all the way from gambling ads, you know, for Sky Bet and whatnot, all the way through to, you know, e-commerce. We do a lot of SaaS work, you know, so SaaS company sign-ups and, you know, funnel generation or anything really. I mean, it's you know, Facebook more in particular is such a it's such a beast now. You know, I mean, I've been on it since the bad old days when, you know, you had people advertising all sorts and you could pretty much do what you want. I mean, now it's the technical advances are just unbelievable. I mean, I still get amazed by, you know, dynamic remarketing ads. I just think they are fantastic. I mean, I know a lot of people who know paid social would think, you know, that's a bit yesterday, but you know, they're still so powerful, you know, and I mean, we see amazing results, especially from e-commerce. I mean, I think one ad at the moment for an e-commerce client of mine, selling cricket stuff. You know, obviously it's exactly the right season despite the rain to be selling. You know, it's their real busy period at the moment, and paid social is making up about 30% of their revenue at the moment, which is, you know, nothing to be sniffed at all. So yeah, I mean, I think at the moment paid social is in a place where it last year and the year before it was attracting a lot of smaller businesses, a lot of guys who were spending, you know, circa 500 quid a month tops. You know, and I think that began to flood the platforms a bit as well. I think because that drove the cost up for a lot of people, I think now you're starting to that's starting to stop, and you're starting to see people A, having to be more clever with their ads and actually have proper funnels. You know, gone are the days where you could just put a flat ad out, a cold ad out to a big audience and watch the sales roll in. You know, now I think to see value, you have to have content pieces, you have to have value ads, you have to warm these audiences up before you can convert. You know, you have to use lookalike audiences. You have to try different ad types, so lead generation ads, click ads, you know, anything you can. You have to test thoroughly. You have to have it planned out. You know, it is much more paid social for me has taken on much more of a pay-per-click style channel than it has ever been. And that's because of the competition, really. So I hope that there is still, you know, I do believe there is still life in paid social. There was a lot of, I read an article the other day about someone saying, you know, this the whole Facebook data thing, and you know, this is going to see the death of Facebook ads and, you know, and Instagram ads, and you know, people are getting I've had enough of it, and all this kind of stuff is all right. I think, well, I don't actually think that's true. I think, you know, any advertiser that's running good campaigns will have seen their numbers, you know, providing they've managed it properly and they've done, you know, everything that they can to be running quality campaigns, will still be seeing the same ROI, if not better. So yeah, you know, I think Twitter, I think, is an interesting one. No one I know seems to have cracked Twitter ads, which I find amazing. I mean, I honestly don't know what one person.
Yeah, I've never. I mean, paid social isn't my thing particularly, but the the number of meetings I've been in, and they just don't even get a mention in at the
No.
now. You know, LinkedIn's always kind of labeled as the expensive network.
Yeah.
So largely we only largely discuss those with clients that have the budgets that can accommodate a LinkedIn kind of.
I think LinkedIn is one to watch, I think, because I think the user time on LinkedIn, I read a report the other day that the usage time on LinkedIn, which is basically from a paid social point of view, in fact, from any performance media point of view, you're looking at, you know, what's the usage time on site? You know, what's the usage time on the network? And I've seen, and that's why Facebook have been so successful, along with the fact that they, you know, were able to introduce their ads slowly, and it's targeted and all that sort of thing. But it's actually the usage time on Facebook which gives you the profitability. And I think LinkedIn, I read somewhere that the usage time, and the usage frequency is starting to increase, which I think is very interesting. So for me, LinkedIn, I would expect to see LinkedIn as a company be putting some eggs into their advertising platform. I think the potential has always been there, but I think their business is very much, I would assume anyway, I've not looked into it too much, but you know, their revenue comes from recruitment and HR. You know, that's you know, the sort of premium packages and all that kind of thing. I'm sure you've been sold every day of the week. You know, you always get those emails for £50 free credit and all that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's the forgotten about entity on LinkedIn, really. They did do an update about I think it was about a year ago now. But I would expect LinkedIn to come into play very soon if those user stats keep climbing.
That's interesting. And just on the flip side of that, then, have you seen any of the negative effects from Facebook announced at the start of the year, didn't they, that they were going to show less advertising, particularly from corporate networks? So have you seen any downturn in any of your stats yet?
That's interesting, because as a flat answer, not really. There's noticeably where we are running. I think what it's done is it's made advertisers at the top of the funnel be more targeted. So where I would used to have, I don't know, a generic content piece and then a generic video, I would now have three or four videos, and I would have them going after slightly different segments. You know, so I would normally do that on age or depending on the client is. But that, at the very top of the funnel, that's where I'm seeing slightly more expensive. There's a definite change. But to be honest, if you set your funnels up properly and you're using all the tactics that Facebook offer you and Instagram offer you, if you are, trying to collect email addresses quite early on in the funnel, if you're using lookalikes, if you are using, your pixels and all the stuff that a paid social marketer would use, and if they've done that right, and you're also, your ads are designed properly and they're well researched and well tested, I'm not seeing that much of a difference further down the funnel. The conversion ads have not really been affected, to be honest, because we've already got people in that stage where they want to buy. They've already given us that interest, they've already given us that intent that they want to buy. So it's a case of actually putting the right ad in front of them, putting the right content, putting the right landing page there, and obviously the right tech behind it to ensure that they can purchase and have a smooth user journey from there. That's really made a difference for me. But having said that, I'm a member of a few sort of Facebook ads geek groups, as you do, and people are saying differently. They are saying that e-commerce ads are struggling, and that they have seen a definite turn. So not for me personally, that's not blowing smoke up my own backside, but just not for me personally. But I think that some people are affected out there for sure.
So just you made a good point there about how about the levels of the funnel then. So if I'm XYZ client that's coming to you, and I've either got a client of my own or I work somewhere and we're looking at doing paid social, am I right in thinking that you're not just gonna look at, okay, so we can get you some ads on Facebook, you're gonna look at multiple levels of, right, we get you this traffic, who is this traffic, what do they look like, what's the demographic that we're going after, but then not only that, we then want to look at multiple levels of marketing and your conversion funnel to get them into your business.
Absolutely. The best analogy I can give it is the site and the offering, and conversion rates on site and demographics, that's all the cake, and paid social and PPC, the performance stuff, that's the cherry on the cake. That's the last piece of the puzzle. There's no point, and I see small businesses doing this. I've come across one recently, and they were sending traffic, paid social traffic. I won't digress the industry or anything like that, but they were running paid social traffic to a website which was easily 15 years old. I mean, it looked it, it looked old. There was no conversion point, there was no nothing. And I said to them, I said, guys, you know, you may as well just take that money straight out of the bank and throw it down the drain. You know, they had no conversion tracking. They had no idea if it was working. You know, I think a previous marketing manager had just gone, yeah, we need to do this, and rolled with it.
So, yeah, I mean, for new customers, or, you know, anyone who's looking to implement paid social, it is as much about the user journey and market research. And you know, my market research goes well beyond just learning the industry. You know, for example, if I was looking to target sort of marketing consultants and self-starters, it wouldn't just be a case of going, okay, well, Chartered Institute of Marketing, Marketing Week, all those kind of things. You know, you have to go a bit further than that. And I would look at, go down things like Amazon, look at Amazon and see which books, look at Chartered Institute of Marketing books, then find authors. And then once you find authors, you can Google them, see if they register on Audience Insights, see if there's a little audience there. You know, you have to go there. For me, for the top level, top of the funnel targeting, you have to go that extra mile. You have to, you know, find audiences that people necessarily wouldn't find. And normally, you know, things like Tony Robbins and people like that are good places to start with, like marketing consultants and whatnot. And once you've built those audiences, it's then a case of, what does your funnel look like as a business, and then how does paid social work alongside that to help with that funnel? So a good example of that would be, we do a bit of work for a county software company, and we run paid social for them, and we know that, you know, they're after accountants, accounting managers, small-time practitioners. Now, we know that, you know, we've tested that actually for them, paid social, no matter how good the ad and how good the content, will only, at the top of the funnel, only give you so much awareness and only give you so much traffic. Mm-hmm. What we've learned now is actually paid social is best used for tactical retargeting for when people have registered an interest. So, you know, all the paid social kicks in if someone visits certain pages on their site and spends over a certain time, quite basic. And then it's automatically triggered if someone takes out a demonstration on a certain product. Mm-hmm. So if someone takes out a demonstration on, for example, corporation tax, they will then get automatically a retargeted video on, you know, testimonials. So other practitioners talking about the software. There'll be a bit from the MD saying, you know, this is what we're trying to do. There'll be a bit from the CTO saying, this is what the product's designed for. There's a specific landing page, you know, a really, really, really heavily targeted conversion stuff for a very specific market. And that for me is, you know, that's going on already on their site. You know, these pages exist, and, you know, the sales guys would be on the phone. There's emails going out saying, you know, hey, this is, you know, with the same content. It's from, you know, testimonials and the CTO. It's the same stuff. It's just mirrored on paid social. And, you know, that's worked for them, as where other clients I can think of. You know, they are very much like publishers, for example, are more about top of the funnel because they just want people to come to the site. That's where they charge, obviously, for advertising. Mm. So, you know, more large scale, large targeted content pieces that are not clickbait, because I would never advise anyone to do clickbait, but, you know, it's very it's more value driven. It's more come and see us, come and read this, and then, you know, the retargeting kicks in trying to get people to come back. So paid social has to be a reflection of the business. There is no set in stone way of how paid social should work. And I think that's where a lot of people are wasting money is, you know, you see a lot of, I'm sure anyone in the paid social space would know, you see a lot of guys who sort of said, oh, you know, we have this foolproof way of making bulletproof return on investment. And you've seen these guys, yeah, right? And you could, you know, I'll be honest, I've gone down the path of following one before. And you quickly realize that there's no way in hell that this is going to work. For it might work for one type of business, but it won't work for another. And I think that's the skill that a paid social guy has to have, or girl or guy has to have, is the ability to recognize where paid social fits in and where it doesn't. And I think that is the ultimate difference between paid social 3 or 4 years ago and paid social now.
That's a really good way of putting it. That's a really good way of putting it. And it as you've been talking, it's sort of reminded me a little bit about how, you know, when we do SEO for clients, as you well know.
Yeah.
And it's about having the confidence almost to look at there's dozens of different things I could do to optimize your website online.
Yeah.
But it's about having the balls, I suppose, having the confidence to choose maybe two or three of those and say, right, well, we're going to trial these, we're going to get some data back from them, we can then make some informed decisions and we can then move on or add a bit more, find out what works. And when you're coming to something cold, if you're working for your employer or whatever, you seem to want to do everything straight away.
Yeah.
And actually that's not the best approach.
No.
The best thing that can happen there is that you get data blind. You might get lucky and get some good results, but
yeah.
If I was a betting man, I'd say you definitely wouldn't know why you'd got those results.
Absolutely. You'll just be overwhelmed. And actually that's a really good point as well. You know, a previous job of mine, you know, I was managed by, and quite often paid social guys are, that they're managed by people who don't quite understand paid social. And it's like, well, why are we not spending, you know, we've got a budget of 200K. Why are we not spending, why are we not on that run rate yet? And I would also say, well, you have to test these things. You know, testing is massive in paid social. It really is. You know, you have to, it's all about trial and error, and you need that element of patience that you know, what the method that you're going down and the reasons you're going down that method are correct and they are going to give you results. You just have to find that sweet spot, and that requires testing. You're right. You know, it's the same with paid social. You could spend 200K in 2 months. And you'll probably see, you probably would have lost, I don't know, depending on the industry, you probably would have made 100 grand, and you'll be able to see some results and you'll be able to get some learnings, but you won't really know, you know, you won't really understand where that 100K has come from. So,
I had this conversation with a guy last week, actually. We don't run paid social ads, but we do AdWords management for companies. And we this guy came to us. He's an existing client, and one of his divisions had come to him. He works for a large, it's an international company, actually. So they've got budgets and they've got money. And this guy came and said, right, well, we've got a new product that we're taking to market. We've never done anything like this before, but one of our competitors launched this product. It's doing really well for them. We want a piece of the pie. Right, here's I think it was 30K a month. Go spend it.
Right.
And I'm like, I just said to him, I can work up to a spend of 30K a month.
Yeah.
But if you're wanting me to go and blow 30 grand of your money, and for me not to know what I'm doing with it, it just ain't happening.
No.
So, you know, we said, right, we put a plan in place to start smaller than that.
Yeah.
And work up to it. But it's, yeah, as you say, it's people that just want to, you've got to find that sweet spot. Once you find that sweet spot, you can chuck as much money at it as you want. You can exploit it.
Yeah.
But finding that sweet spot's where the talent
is. It's all about testing. And I think a lot of people who see the performance media as money in, money out, think it's a cap, you know, and think, oh, we'll just, you know, we spent 30K, we made 60K, let's spend 60K and make 120K. Yeah. You know, I've had this discussion with managing directors and the powers that be in various companies before, and saying, well, it doesn't really work like that. You know, you have to, if you're going to scale, you need to scale, you know, you need to scale your understanding and scale your ads and your targeting and your funnel and everything that comes with it. And I said, that's not just a case of copy and paste and see what happens. That's, you know, that's targeted research, and that's, you know, that's comes under good knowledge and good market knowledge. And a lot of paid social people now, and I have actually taken the approach, and not so much in the UK, but you're certainly seeing it abroad, where there are sort of, especially in the US, where it's, you know, the markets are just so much bigger. People are actually going down niche routes, you know, actually becoming paid social specialists for real estate or machines or whatever it is. That's not really happened in the UK yet, but anyone out there who is looking to become a paid social specialist, a bit of advice for you, and something that I'm looking at doing in the next sort of 6 months, is actually look at becoming a specialist within an industry. It's very, very common just not in the UK. It's very common globally. The US, you'll find paid social specialists, real estates, as I mentioned, games, probably guns, knowing what they're like, you know, all clothes, all different industries. There's a paid social specialist for it. And I think if you can tap into a market which is of a high-end point of conversion, like property, you know, you could have yourself a really nice little business there, because it's really not common over here. It's really not common at all, and I'm struggling to understand why, to be honest. You do get paid social agencies, but you don't get specialists, which is contrary to sort of everywhere else in the world. So be interesting to see how it sort of pans out in the next couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm part of a Facebook group for WordPress. Well, it started being a Facebook group for WordPress developers and that kind of thing, but it's broadened. But there's one guy in there, and his name escapes me at the moment. But anyway, there's a guy in there who specialized in websites for wedding professionals, wedding services.
Yeah.
And he's based in Bristol or somewhere. Yeah. So he is UK based, and he was there's a podcast that goes along with it, and he was on there, and it just makes total sense about how you know, why don't you why aren't you niching down? All of the Americanisms come out, like the riches are in the niches, and I know that sounds really twee, but actually for starters, they can't say the word niche properly. But the reaches are in the niches. The mentality of it does make perfect sense.
Yeah, I think that's where the potential is for a lot of people, to be honest. It just doesn't seem to happen over here that much. Obviously that was that example, but I don't come across people who are specialists in certain areas that much, which I find, it might just be my experiences, I don't know, but I just find that bizarre.
You know, I think I used to work at an agency that specialised in education. And actually, if you look at the So Agency website, we kind of come across as if we're education specialists. And it's not so much that, where that comes from is Steve, my business partner, he's got nothing to do with digital at all. He's a branding consultant, and he specialized in major publications. And actually, he's back in kind of the late 90s when I met him, late 90s, early 2000s when I met him. You know, he was doing these prospectuses for universities that are hundreds, if not 1,000 or more pages long.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was winning awards for them and this, that, and the other. And I think actually, if you go back into kind of traditional marketing or agencies before digital was their main focus, you did have these specialist things. But as things have become more digital, particularly in the UK, it's there's been this need to sort of be a jack of all trades and a master of none.
Yeah,
and we're still in that.
I think that will come out of that though eventually.
Yeah, I think.
You know, I mean, I've started to tailor our business towards, you know, startups and small companies. And I think, you know, that's where we're already starting to specialize, you know, in what we're trying to offer. I think a lot of digital agencies are starting, not necessarily consciously, but, you know, if I cast my mind back to the Odds Checker days, we had an agency who exclusively worked in gambling. If you went on their website, you wouldn't know it. You know, they didn't package themselves as a gambling marketing agency, but that's all they worked for. They didn't work for any other type of clients. So I think people are starting to subconsciously do it without kind of realizing that actually we need to package ourselves up like this. And you know, I think perhaps some of the bigger agencies will start to, you know, have a kind of a web of brands which say they cater to XYZ, but it's actually just the same team. I think that's where we're going. You know, I think a lot of agencies will jump on board with that, much like people in e-commerce are doing. You know, they have four different websites that sell the same stuff, same clothes, drop shipping. The drop shippers of this world who seem to pop websites out like hot dinners. Yeah, unbelievable.
There's good old Shopify.
Oh, they love it. They love it. I have a lot of respect for those people, but you know, I just they just seem to sort of produce a brand, get a website, go to GoDaddy, buy it, build one, away you go. as another website, you know. And it's just, I think that's where agencies are going. I really do. I think in a couple of years you'll see a lot of agencies who will be specializing massively.
Cool, mate. That has been that's been fantastic.
It's been great fun. It's been good to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's certainly more we could talk about to do with your paid social and how it fits in with funnel, your marketing funnel, even how you create that funnel itself. But I think you know, knowing how we're wanting to sort of structure this podcast, I think we'll have to put another episode in the diary.
And, happy to come back.
You know, yeah, that'd be brilliant. Robbie, so before you go, I've just invited you actually to be part of the Marketing Development Podcast group on Facebook. So if anybody wants to get hold of you, if you could accept, you'll be in there. But do you want to give details of how people can get in touch with you should they wish?
Yeah, sure. So if you want to just drop me an email on robbie@rjhdigital.com, you're more than welcome. If you know anything at all that I can help with, if you just want a bit of advice or anything digital, just let me know. Or if you have any more questions on what we've been speaking about today, I'd be happy to give you a hand.
Fantastic. Cheers, mate. Really appreciate your time.
Cool. Thanks, Pete. It's been fun. It's been good coming on here. And then best of luck with it. I hope it takes off for you.
Cheers, mate. Appreciate it.
Cool.
So there you have it. Robbie really is a top bloke. Come over and say hi in the Marketing Development Podcast. I'm sure he won't mind any of us bombarding him with questions about agency life, social PPC, all that kind of stuff. If you want to join the group, please head over to peteeverett.com/group and it will forward you on. Alternatively, just search Facebook for the Marketing Development Podcast and you can join us there. We'll see you next week.